Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We have a great show lined up for you today. I am absolutely beyond thrilled to introduce you to Jim Burns. Now, for many of you, he will need no introduction because you have been following his work like I have for many years now. Now, Jim is the president of Homeward, and he speaks to thousands of people around the world each year. He has more than 2 million resources in print in, get this, 20 languages. He primarily writes and speaks on the values of Homeward, which are things that we care about: strong marriages, confident parents, empowered kids, and healthy leaders. Now, some of his most popular books are Doing Life with Your Adult Children, which we're going to talk about and give away today, by the way, The Purity Code, Creating an Intimate Marriage, and Have Serious Fun, and Finding Joy in the Empty Nest. Jim and his wife, Kathy, live in Southern California. They have 3 grown daughters, 3 sons-in-laws, and 4 grandchildren, which I'm going to go out on a limb here and say are probably the pride and joy of your life right now. Jim, am I right? Welcome to the show.
Jessica, great to be with you, and you are absolutely right. In fact, 2 of them are staying overnight tonight, and I want to leave my office and go get ready for them because we're going to have a blast tonight.
You're going to sugar them up. You're going to have no rules, and you know, and then you'll send them back. Like that's what I'm looking forward to.
You absolutely just read my autobiography with how I handle these kids.
I love it.
And my daughter just rolls her eyes. She's like, oh, man, give me a break here, Dad.
It's your privilege, though. It is your privilege, and you should exercise it. Every kid should have grandparents like that. I know mine do. And actually, when I was a young mom and I was working as a nurse and I would go do some shifts at the hospital, my kids would get to be where they're like, aren't you going to work today? Like, we want to go over to our grandparents' house. Well, we are going to be talking about adult children today. So if you have adult children, or if you are an adult child, which if you're a parent, you are, this show is for you. Jim, I loved this book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children, and the subtitle is the best, Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. So I want to back up first and just tell us your story. Tell us how you came to know the Lord. Give us a little taste of your testimony.
Well, you know, I wasn't raised in a Christian home, Jessica, and so I became a Christian when I was 16, right during the Jesus Revolution. Remember that movie? I was there, not at the movie, but I was there in kind of real time, real life. And in fact, my parents were frustrated that I had made a commitment to Christ because they just didn't understand it. Over the years, you know, they changed, and both of them now are with the Lord because they became Christians much later in life. But from pretty much almost day one, I wanted to work with kids, youth ministry. So my background was went to college, met my wife there. We got married 1 week after college graduation. Wow. So we became adults instantly. You know, today's adult child meanders toward responsibility, and a lot of times they meander toward marriage, frankly. And you know, we didn't do either of those things. And I wrote a book called Getting Ready for Marriage, and I think everything that I say in the book, Kathy and I did not do at the beginning. So that's why we had a couple.
That makes the best books.
You know, atrocious, right? But anyway, my joy in life was working with kids, and I absolutely loved that. And then it kind of morphed into deciding that I was working with these kids. And I can remember saying to a friend of mine named Doug Fields, who's kind of a guru in youth ministry, and he was my intern at the time, believe it or not. But I said, I said, you know, these parents drop their kids off and they go to brunch. And what I wish would happen is that the kids could drop the parents off, because I think they needed as much as them. And it actually, that was prophetic for me, because as time went on, I started moving toward working with parents and trying to help parents both in the area of their parenting and in their marriages, and also single parents. I have such a deep love for single parents. I just know that they're working so hard at what they're doing, and oftentimes don't realize they're too tired to realize it. So my career, if you would, my calling moved not away from kids, because I still wake up in the morning thinking, how do we help kids make good decisions? But the fact was that I started moving toward, you know, thinking about parents. And Homeward is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the U.S. And people would come to our seminars, and then they would say, but what about these adult children? And I didn't have adult children. So I was like, well, yeah, that's going to be an issue probably, but I don't really know much about it. And then I got adult children, and then, whoa, things changed. These were kids raised. I wasn't raised in the church, right? They were, and yet they started saying, you know, church is boring. Two of them went to Christian school. So I go to a Christian school. Why would I need to go to church? Why would I need fellowship? I have it all. And they started, you know, breaking some of our values. Our kids didn't do the worst of worst, which I hear every day, but they still walked away from some of the values that we never dreamed they would. And, so, you know, here we are talking about doing life with your adult children, because Kathy and I had no clue what to do. And what we realized was our kids had no clue what to do. They didn't know how to become adults, and we didn't know how to parent an adult.
Well, you know what? That's something that we definitely share in common, because I look back at my journey and have a history of generational dysfunction, and that's a lot related to addiction and brokenness, and especially in parental relationships throughout my family. And when I wrote my book, Behind Closed Doors, and How to Navigate Life's Toughest Issues with your Teens, I started from that place of brokenness too, Jim. I mean, my opening scene is my 13-year-old daughter throwing a book at my head while I was driving. This was four volumes. Like, I almost passed out. You know, this was not just something that happened that was lighthearted. This was a serious conflict. And I think it's really great to hear both you and I saying that, saying, hey, we don't have it all together. Because I don't think that we do a good job of that in the church. You know, there's a lot of stigma and shame.
Well, I think there's people like you, Jessica, and others who will now be open and vulnerable. And I think a previous generation wasn't willing to do that. And I knew some of these people. I'm an old guy. And I knew that their families were hurting, or even their own stuff, but they weren't willing to talk about it. So, you know, because when you say, hey, you know, my daughter threw a book at me, that actually gives me, that gives you credibility, because that's
is that what it is?
and that's called the family. And what that does is, you know, when we speak out of our own, you know, vulnerability, or even our own at times brokenness, that only gives credibility to the message. And people can relate to it. You know, I've been to marriage conferences, especially where I'll hear people talk on marriage, and, you know, they've never had an argument, or they've never struggled or whatever. And I'm like, wow, I can't relate to those people. I mean, I write on this, and Kathy and I still have. You know, we don't have what we used to have in terms of the negativity, but we speak on it together, and we still talk about, you know, having a fight here or having an argument. We bicker, you know, more than the other things. But I love that you did that with your book. That gives you great credibility.
Well, my husband's family's Italian, so there's definitely a lot of loud talking and hand gesturing that goes on. And, just going to say that, you know, healthy families aren't perfect. There's still conflict. No. There are still problems. There are still setbacks and bad choices, but you can get to that place of healthy. And that's what I hear you saying that you did.
Yeah, no, we did. We made a commitment early on to recover and not repeat. And that was a big deal for us. You know, we found ourselves imitating some of the things of our parents. Now, my dad was an alcoholic. I wasn't an alcoholic, but I had some of his addictive nature. And Kathy's family was just a little crazy, and she wasn't as crazy. But, you know, we imitated the way we communicated, things like that. And we said, we're either going to, you know, the Bible says you inherit the sins of a previous generation to the third and fourth generation. We said, we're either going to repeat some of those things, or we're going to recover. And to be honest, we not that we've done it perfectly, but I think and this is a hope for every parent, we can change the trajectory of a family in one generation. By taking it on and making the kind of decision to, what does it look like to recover? And in doing that, for us, we say we can only have done that with God's presence and God's help in our life. But, you know, we've seen that, you know, our kids who are adults who goofed around when they were in their 20s, but now they're all in their 30s, and, you know, they're making great decisions. They're actually, Christy, my oldest, her kids are the ones who are coming to our house tonight. But they, you know, they go to the same church. They're more involved in the church than we are. I mean, the kids sang in the choir, you know, last week at, you know, the big Christmas program. So, you know, lives, you know, things have changed. And so we now look at this and go, hey, it's still not perfect. We still have disagreements with our adult kids on, you know, several areas of life that we kind of just don't talk about as much when it comes mm-hmm. to politics or some of those kind of things. But we get along, and we're mm-hmm. proud of them, and we're proud that they've, you know, they didn't have to carry the dysfunction that Kathy and I did. So a lot of parents who have the background that sounds like you have mm-hmm. had and Kathy and I, if they take that hit and they go, we're going to recover, there's great news for that. And I think where this comes into play is, you know, we think we're going to be done at age 18, and all of a sudden these adult children show up, and sometimes it means we've got to relearn some issues that we actually knew, but, you know, now we have to refigure out how to parent in a different way.
That's so true. And it makes me think of the verse in Romans, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And you said something really important in there, Jim, because it's not enough just to remove the offending substance, whether that's alcohol or drugs or abuse or whatever it is. You have to relearn new ways to do things. And I think as parents, so often we focus on controlling our kids' behavior, because if they're behaving right. that gives us an immediate feedback loop to give us gratification, like, oh, we must be doing a good job. But that is not how it is, because we have to parent for the long game. Well, I really want to dive into this book because you're talking about renewing it. Right when you think you've got it all down, the game changes when they become grown-ups, or what I call quasi-adults. Like, this is like quasi-adulting. My kids will tell me, we're adults, Mom. And I'm like, yet I still pay for your life. So where do we go with that? But you say in the preface of this book that two key experiences compelled you to write it. So what happened?
Yeah. Well, I would say one was just we kind of went into desperation mode. I know I should say deep research and, you know, a calling for 100 years to talk about it. But actually, it was, you know, we both with Kathy and me, our kids, you know, doing the exact same thing that you just mentioned. I mean, I laughed out loud when you said, you know, your kids would say, but I'm an adult. And you're going, yeah, and I'm paying for, you know, even your cell phone.
Right.
But. And you're still living at our house. And then in COVID, you came back, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yes.
So, you know, that was, for us, it was desperation, because it threw us. We weren't prepared for it. We weren't prepared for them to become adults, because we had done pretty good in the, you use the word control. And basically what you have to do is you have to give up control. And that's a hard thing for control mm-hmm. freaks to do. And, so that was one of them, just the desperation part. And then every one of our friends had stories mm-hmm. and our friends at church and our friends, you know, in ministry who had kids who weren't just doing what they thought was going to happen. Not all of them. And they weren't all horrible, but a lot of them violated values. They strayed from faith. And so the more I saw my own family and the more I listened, that was one of the experiences. So I go, you know what, we need some work on this. And then I got a phone call from a good friend who does a conference, and I've spoken at this conference. This will date me, since 1983, right? And it's about 4,500 people. And he said, hey, I want you to do a session on doing life with your adult children. I think he called it parenting your adult children. I now don't use that term, because I don't think you can parent mm-hmm. your adult children. You're a parent, but you can do life with them. And I said, oh, no, I want to come, but I am not speaking on that. But whoever you have, don't slot me during the same time, because I Kathy and I desperately need to do this. And so he cheated. He said, well, I'm going to pray about this. And I went, well, go ahead and pray, because God needs to talk to me too. And he did it in a unique way. He prayed about it, and then he didn't call me. He called my wife and said, hey, I really want Jim to do something on, you know, parenting your adult children. What do you think about that? And she goes, that would be the best thing. We're going through it, and I want to hear what Jim has to say. And so I come home that night, and she goes, hey, I talked to Dan. And it looks like you're going to do a session on, you know, parenting your adult children. I went, I'm not doing that session. She goes, oh, yes, you are. So God spoke through Kathy and Dan, right? And so I ended up saying, okay, yes. And then I went to resources, and I couldn't find good resources. Mm-hmm. And I found some in the secular world and really very few within the Christian world. There were some, but I think I read three books.
Well, what I hear you saying, Jim, is happy wife, happy life. And that's what I'm getting from there. But listen, when we come back from this break, we are going to dive into the principles of this book, talk about millennials and Gen Z and some specific practical things that you need to do. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hey, friends, welcome back. I am so excited to be talking to Jim Burns, the president of Homeward and the author of the book we're talking about today, Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Now, this is the most important part. Listen up. Keep your mouth shut and the welcome mat out. Now, we are going to start to dive into that. But before we do, because it's close to Christmas, we're doing a giveaway. And you can call and get a copy of this book, 888-589-8840. We're giving away a free copy to the first caller. So we'll be watching for that. Now, welcome back, Jim. We were just diving in and talking about why you wrote this book and the problems that we all face here. And I think it's important for parents to know that there are 9 principles that you cover in this book, and they are not 9 instant life hacks that are going to instantly cure your relationship, you know, instantly make things better. This is a journey. And you are inviting the reader to walk along this journey and to really improve their relationship or strengthen their relationship with their adult kids. So what I want to talk about first, Jim, is this generation of adults. So the adults that we have right now are millennials, and Gen Z is quickly joining their ranks. And you talk about some of the things that makes them different. They're digital natives, which we call them affectionately screenagers, right? They expect technology. They live in a world where everybody wins and everybody gets a prize. Everyone has a blue ribbon. They have different views of work. I mean, you think about our parents or grandparents or even my husband, you know, he's worked for the same company for years. Like, you work for them for decades, you get a watch and you retire. And this generation, they work to live. They don't live to work. They want a healthy marriage and family. They value tolerance as essentially a basic human right. And they're very experiential consumers. They want to spend their money not on material things, but seeking adventure. And I think sometimes, Jim, as older generations, I'm speaking for me, Gen X, boomers, the greatest generation, we view them as lost. They're aimless. They lack moral absolutes. They're confused. And they view us as unenlightened. We're backwards. We're racist and every other kind of ist that you can name. So what miracle cure do you have in here, Jim, for maintaining a positive relationship in the messy middle of this life?
Just describe that better than I've ever heard. This is the world I live in. And you did such a great job on that. You need to, like, take that, you know, 45 seconds and send that out to the world. And I laughed when you said they view us as one way and we view them as another way. And in fact, and it's a great generation. Millennials and Gen Z are different, of course. And millennials are going to be, you know, 25 and a little bit up. And so we're just still learning some things about Gen Z, meaning we can't talk about, like you mentioned, millennials. What's really cool about the millennial generation is that once they've meandered toward marriage, they've meandered toward responsibility, once they've gotten there, they actually see the number one thing. They want a good marriage and they want a good, be good parents, which is great. And so that's, I love that. Gen Z, we don't know yet because they're not getting married yet because marriage is 27 to 29, sometimes even up into the 30s, where that was not the case, you know, at one time. But, you know, I think that is the case, that we as parents, and especially parents of millennials and Gen Zs, is we've got to be students of their culture. That doesn't mean we have to agree. Like, you mentioned something about tolerance. And in Doing Life with Your Adult Children, I say they view tolerance as a major trait of a loving person. So they could be raised in the church with biblical values, and they get to a certain age, and the tolerance is going to trump even the biblical values. So they can't understand why can't you love, you know, this person with a different viewpoint or whatever. Well, we can love them, and so I think it's important for parents to make sure that we can agree to disagree and stick to our biblical values, but not try to be in big arguments with them. Because the tolerance issue is such a fascinating one to me, because really kids who were raised in great, you know, churches and great youth groups and with parents who really taught them morals and values have a different view a lot of times of a lot of different issues. And we always want to try to then convert them right back real quick. And that's not our job. Our job is to let them know what we believe, But at the same time, there's room for us to still love them and not shun them. I was talking with a, maybe I'm saying this so passionately because yesterday I was talking with a woman whose daughter just moved in with her boyfriend. It was, you know, not a good story. She's not happy. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm just going to shun my daughter. And, and I went, well, that's not going to help. You know, you can, yeah. I said to her, do you know, does she know what you believe? Yes. Does she know how you feel? Yes. Well, then broaden the relationship. Don't shun her. My goodness, she's going to, this will crash. It sounded like a terrible thing she was doing in terms of even the decision with this guy fresh out of, you know, new relationship, whatever. I said, so, you know, when she crashes, you need to be that safe person. A safe person doesn't have to disagree, but a safe person has to be there and catch her. And that was some, that in her mind, she goes, no, we don't do that as Christians. We shun. No, we don't do that. We just do the opposite.
You shared a really powerful story in your book about Billy Graham's daughter, actually, and them experiencing this. Can you share that story? It's a great one.
Oh, I love the story. And you know, Ruth Graham is the mom, but there's also a Ruth Graham who's the daughter. They call her Bunny. And I've gotten to know her over the years, and I would never have shared the story if she didn't share it at Billy Graham's funeral. She actually, and it's in a book of hers, but she actually shared it at the funeral. And so she had been in a relationship for many, many, many years, 20 plus, with a man who were her husband, and he actually had broken. It was an infidelity situation over and over and over again. He actually worked for the Graham organization. So you can imagine the, you know, hurt and pain there. So there's a divorce in the picture, and she marries a guy on the rebound, and her mom and dad both said to her, of course, now both Billy and Ruth Graham have passed on, but during this time, her mom and dad both said, we don't think this is a good idea. So this isn't just, you know, you and me, Jessica. This is Billy Graham and Ruth, right? So she married him anyway. Ooh. And 6 weeks into it, she realized there was quite a bit of abuse, and they were right. She was wrong. And she flees the relationship, gets in a car. And again, she's told all this out, you know, in many times, but she even told it at the funeral. And where you go? You go home. So she's driving home from Florida up to Montreat, North Carolina, where the Grahams lived. And she calls and says, hey, I'm coming home. And she didn't say it, but she thought, wow, my parents are going to say, you know, we were right. You were wrong. We told you so. And she gets close enough where they're, you know, they have a guard, they have a gate to their place, of course, being that famous. And so the Billy Graham opens the door. She calls and opens the gate, and he's pacing. His dad now, he's not a famous evangelist. She pulls up, he opens the door, he says, they call her Bunny. Bunny, I'm so happy you're here. Welcome home. Mom has fixed your favorite meal. Let's go. We can take care of all this stuff later, but let's go in. Love you so much, and I'm so proud of you, and gives her a hug. Well, you know, that's what he needed to do. He could have said, I told you so. You know, you've made a second dumb decision, you know, on these kind of things. But instead, he welcomed his daughter home. You know, the Bible says that we both bless and curse with our tongue. Well, blessing, he gave his daughter a blessing by saying, welcome home. Now, again, she made some mistakes. That was for her to decide. She's an adult. She now knows that. But Billy didn't need to push on that. What he needed to be was the loving father. And I just had this when she told me that story, and she told me that story actually in my office one day, I actually cried. Because I just sensed the love of a dad to his daughter, but it's also the love of God to us. That didn't mean that Billy Graham didn't say, I mean, you know, Billy Graham had disagreed with her decision. He still showed love to his daughter. And I think that's what God does for us. So I think that's more the kind of relationship. He didn't accept some of those poor choices. He accepted his daughter. It's a good lesson.
And honestly, I've heard the story many times before, not firsthand like you have. I can't even imagine, because I still have tears in my eyes. And you can't help but think about the story of the prodigal son and, you know, kill the fatted calf, get the robe, get the ring.
Right.
And I think, you know, those things are hard, because we're talking about adult children. For a teenager, it's going to be different. There's going to be different boundaries in place.
Right.
There will be a different relationship.
Sure.
But you're talking about, we're talking about adult kids. And one of the principles in your book is that your role as a parent must change. Now, why is it so hard, Jim, for us to relinquish our role and to give them that independence?
Well, we've spent two decades doing it one way. And you used the word control earlier, and there's a lot of control in it. You know, when we're raising our kids, especially until at least 10, we are in control, and then we begin to coach them. And, you know, I think when they're later teens, you're kind of consulting them more or less, meaning most of their day-to-day decisions are being done by themselves, but you can put them on restriction. You can, you know, you have consequences, things like that. When they become an adult, we have to relinquish the control to them and give them the passport to adulthood. And in fact, what I say in that first, talking about, you know, changing our role, we're fired. So we're fired as a day-to-day parent, not as a parent. They still call us mom and dad, but we're fired as a day-to-day parent. And so there's a sense of loss for the parent. And I think we probably underestimate that sense of loss, you know, in our relationship with our kids and with life. And so, you know, there's some grief that has to go on. I think we actually had to grieve that our kids didn't need us every day and that they didn't call us as much as we wanted them to call. We still talk to them a lot, but they didn't call us. They were moving on with their life exactly like what we were supposed to do. Cause the bottom line is, you know, helping them become responsible adults, but at the same time, what do you do when they're not all that responsible? You still have to give them the passport to adulthood. And I think that's really critical. Key principle.
It's so hard because, you know, when my oldest daughter went to college, she called me one day about October of her freshman year. And she said her friends were having a really hard time because a lot of them, their moms like kept calling and calling and calling. And really what it was is those moms were grieving the loss of their identity. Yeah. You know, like, what do I do with my date now that you're not here?
No, you're exactly right. So what we have to do is we as parents have to rewrite the script of our life by letting go of control. And I remember C.S. Lewis said, change always involves a sense of loss. And I don't think, and this is really good for your listeners who also have younger kids, you know, it's going to change. And so there is the sense of loss. And when we're prepared for it, even with the empty nest, you know, a lot of people, they go into the empty nest. What is the demographic that has the greatest divorce right now, percentage-wise? It's the graying of divorce. It's when people 50 and over. And it's because they had buried stuff under the mat. They weren't prepared for an empty nest. And now it's just the wife and the husband, and they don't even like each other. So, you know, it's a concern. So we have to prepare for that. But we also do have to prepare for that sense of loss. And that means we're going to have to allow the kids to understand that experience is a better teacher than advice, and we'll have to, you know, probably keep our mouths shut more.
You know, I'll be real transparent with you, Jim. And I had my 25th wedding anniversary this year. My husband and I celebrated 25 years and we went on a 10-day trip together. We have never been gone for longer than three days together the whole time that we had alone, the whole time that we have been married. And if I'm really honest, I was kind of scared about it, you know, thinking, oh my goodness, like, are we going to get on each other's nerves? But I can tell you it was really great. We're like, oh, I remember you. You're really fun. And I think it's hard for parents to prioritize that relationship, especially in these, you think you're busy when your kids are toddlers. Like, let me tell you, at least they go to bed at like 8 o'clock. Teenagers never go to bed. No, that is really hard.
I know. You know, I wrote a book called Understanding Your Teen, and one chapter is on marriage. And it kind of just threw it in there saying how difficult it was and how busy you get and blah, blah, blah. Do you know that that's the number one chapter people write? I mean, I wrote a chapter on creating a media safe home with teens, you know, sexuality, all the stuff that I thought was all important. And it is. But it was the marriage one that hit some kind of a core in people's hearts because their marriages were hurting. And I know we're going off on a side note, but that is key to when we're talking about this. Our role has to change because we really, literally, we do have more time once our kids become adults to focus on, you know, some of our other priorities. And this is a good one to be focusing on, a marriage.
It is. And, you know, one of the other principles you have in your book is that is something actually that I heard also Larry Fowler, who does grandparenting. He's a grandparenting expert. He said the same thing. And that is, unsolicited advice is usually taken as criticism. And this kind of plays into what we're talking about, Jim, because what I see among my friends, you know, now I've got a lot of friends who have emerging adult children here, and that can cause a lot of conflict, too, because you may not even agree on the advice that you should give or how you should handle it. And I think, right. you know, so you've got the challenge of what advice do we give? And then you got to get on the same page. That's how do you do that?
Yeah, no, Larry Feller is my very good friend and I have such respect for him. And so I'm not surprised we're both saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Although I think I have more of a scar on my tongue than even Larry does. Okay. Because I've had to learn to bite my tongue because I want to give, I'm an advice giver. That's what I do. And sometimes I'll think I'll give advice to my kids and I'm doing it with pure motives, but what they're hearing, if I'm intrusive with advice, is that they don't hear the lesson I'm trying to give them. They hear, but you really don't respect that I'm all grown. And I think most parents do that. And so I think it's so key that we understand that in us giving advice that's unsolicited, they didn't hear the advice. They heard, you don't trust me to be an adult. And sometimes rightly so, because they're not making the great decision. Or we're in the case that, you know, we are paying for everything or whatever. But I think we have to be really careful. And I think we have to ask for permission, frankly. And I had that experience with my daughter, Christy, once, where her and her husband were moving from California to Texas. And they had 2 months living with us because of a lease, you know, changing thing. And we loved it. It was great. And we had two grandkids and we were having a blast. And one day they were kind of in I'd call it not a fight, but they were in this argument about the move. And so I'm in the kitchen, I'm listening. It's kind of weird to hear my own daughter and her husband having an argument. I'm going, hey, you guys need some communication work in my head. And then I said, hey, can I give some advice?
Oh, well, Jim, we're gonna stop it right there and leave our listeners on a cliffhanger. We'll be right back and you'll find out what Jim said in the middle of the situation. Don't go away.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends. You are entering right in the middle of a very important conversation that we're having today with Jim Burns, the president of Homeward. And we are talking about his book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children, Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. I'd like to congratulate Richard from Tennessee. That's a new state for us to add in our giveaway. Congratulations. We'll be sending you a copy of this book. Now, Jim, we left our listeners in a big cliffhanger. You were talking about right. this fight. You know, I'm invested. Your kids are fighting in the kitchen. And what happens right. next?
Well, I had walked in and said, hey, can I have permission? I did what I told you. You know, I think it's best. Can I have permission? And Christy looked at me and she said, Dad. And then she put her hand up and said, not right now. And I went, wait.
You're like, do you know who I am?
Yeah, people pay me to give advice. So it was about the move. And I thought both of them had a poor idea and I had a better one. So I just kept my mouth shut and they did the move and we lost notice that I'm saying we, because I'm going against the grain of my book. We ended up buying a new crib for him because the crib fell off. It's on Route 66 someplace. Oh. The whole year they were in Texas, they didn't really have a bed. They just put the mattress on the floor because they got some messed up things and one dresser. So we're in Fort Worth, Dallas area, helping them move in a week later, and we're having dinner and we're talking about the disaster of the move. And Christy all of a sudden looked at me and she said, Dad, you had a thought, right? What was your suggestion on the move? I said, oh, I would have blah, blah, blah. And she goes, Dad, why didn't you tell me? And I said, I tried. But the point being is experience is a better teacher than advice. Just like when our kids are little and they put their finger on something hot, they're going to do that once, but they're not going to hopefully do it again. And so I found with my own kids that if I would keep my mouth shut, I could move my relationship from being the parent who gives a lot of advice to actually a mentor where they call me and ask me. My daughter Heidi, my youngest, called me yesterday and she said, hey, I have three things. I've got a kind of a dad list and they're all kind of mentoring type questions. What she had no idea was that she made my day because she would not always want to ask that when she was younger. Okay. So, you know, you can't, if you keep your mouth shut, they still will, you can still give input, but you do it at their timing, not our timing. And that's not always easy, but I think that's the key issue for me. And so again, parents have to just learn to, well, you're probably right. And I think parents are usually right, but they're just going to have to let those adults, you know, make some of those decisions themselves and then actually sometimes pay for the consequences.
Well, I've got two questions about that. So you talk about the timing. The timing is important. But the first question is the delivery is important too. So how do we initiate conversation rather than give a lecture? And there's a difference between us feeling like we're giving a lecture and our kids feeling like we're giving them a lecture.
Oh, isn't that true? I can remember with my kids, one time I said something and my daughter said to my wife, she goes, "Mom, Dad's yelling at me." I honestly was not yelling, but I was being somewhat intense, but I was not yelling. I had not raised my voice, but she saw that as a lecture and she saw it as yelling. And so I have to be careful with that. I think really when our kids are adults, Jessica, what I vote for is for us to either ask for permission or keep our mouth shut and not say anything, or say it in a non-judgmental way, even though our mind and our heart is screaming on the inside. I think just on the outside, we say, well, you know, here's another option if you've thought about it, but you're the one who, obviously, you're an adult, and you're going to have to make that decision on your own, but here's something I might do.
Well, Jim,
by doing that, it changes the relationship in a good way.
I agree. And if I could see my husband right now, I think he'd be like a bobblehead nodding his head because he's had that experience where especially the girls in the family will say, "Dad, you're yelling." And he's like, "I'm not yelling. This is yelling." You know, and we're like, "No, that's screaming." You know, it's terrible. But I think that my second question is that, you know, honestly, Jim, sometimes we see our kids headed down a path, just like you said, "I told you so." Like, I know what's ahead of you. This is a terrible decision. Like, you could actually be harmed greatly here. So where do the boundaries lie in letting experience being a teacher, but really speaking up to warn them about danger ahead?
Right. Well, I think you're talking about when a grown child violates your values or estranges from faith, and you know your heart is broken. The principle is this: you can't want it more than they want it. And most of the time, we want it more than they want it. They haven't thought about it. They don't have the experience that we have. And you know, there's a phrase, and I love this phrase, and I wish I could quote who it was from. And I went and looked to see who it was from, and they put my name by it. Well, I say it so often, I think somebody thinks now this is my quote, but it's not. But it says, "Good thing Easter is a season and not just a day, because some miracles take time." Mm. And I say that to the listener right now who, you know, their child is just straying from faith or they're violating values, and a lot of times those two go together. But I think there are some principles with this. You can't want it more than they want it. And one is you offer your adult child tough love. Now, people confuse tough love. They think that's when we, like the woman I said yesterday was doing some shunning, they confuse that with being mean to our kids. I think tough love says allow the consequences of their, what we would think, poor choice to happen. That's what tough love is allowing the consequence, not always bailing them out. And, you know, it's hard. I have a friend whose daughter had a DUI because she had an open container. She wasn't even at the drunkenness level, but she had an open container. And so she got pulled in. He had to bail her out of literally of the police station. And then they decided they have a lot of money. They could have actually probably got her off the hook on this DUI easy. And instead they said, you know what, she's going to have the consequence. So she went to DUI school. It was on her record for 10 years. It cost her double the amount for insurance that she had to pay. But you know what? That was a good idea. Because she had to learn that girl doesn't drive with an open container, and I don't even think she drinks and drives, you know. And so, again, it goes back to a phrase I said with tough love. I think, tell them what you think. Do they know what you feel? Do they know what you believe? Yeah, but then expand it. And we can't dump our anger on theirs, and those are all hard. You mentioned the prodigal mm-hmm. son, and I like to call it the loving father, because what the loving father did was, you know, he the father gave the son, you know, all the inheritance. And so he squandered it on partying and prostitutes, it says in the Living Bible. But when he came back, the father loved him. But the father, when you think about the story, the elder son comes in, he's not happy about it. story of Jesus, of course, telling the story of this story. The elder son comes in and goes, "Dad, you've never had a party for me. And, you know, look at, he's squandered all this money." And he said, "Son, all that I have is yours." So that means that the father didn't change the deal. The son was still going to inherit the money, this elder son, because he'd already given the others. So this, that was tough love. He didn't say, "I'm going to take some of your money from your inheritance. I'm going to give it now to the younger son." No, he didn't do that. There was a consequence to that. I also think that the bottom line is this, that when they are violating values or straying from faith, the bottom line is, do you still love me? So it's very possible to show love and express our love in the midst of them making poor choices. They know we're, they know what we believe. They know what we feel. So do you still love me? And sometimes that means, you know, building a relationship around the issue of whatever that horrible issue is, but still being in relationship. And it's possible to love and not agree. It just is. We can do
those. Those are all such great words of advice, Jim. And I agree. I think as parents, when our kids make poor choices, no matter what their age is, we have to look at what are the natural consequences of those actions, because sometimes those are enough. And the only thing that we can do as parents to emphasize it or to make it worse is to pour shame on top of that situation. And that's really not going to help anybody. And you say in this book that even good parents have children who make poor choices. And I know I've heard Ruth Bell Graham say that God is a perfect father and we are not perfect children. And, you know, and the other thing that you say that I think is so wise is that it might be too late for prevention, but it's never too late for redemption. Mm-hmm. So in our last few minutes together, Jim, I want to talk about specifically to those parents that who have a front row seat right now to their child's journey to self-destruction. And I want to talk about how do they care for themselves during that time. I think so often they'll pour every emotional, financial, every resource at their disposal into trying to stop this train wreck, to, you know, influence the situation. But we harm ourselves sometimes in that process. So what do you say to encourage those parents?
I mean, you're so right, because, you know, you mentioned shame, and you know, there's something called shame-based parenting, and maybe they had that, so they were doing it on their kids. But you know what's interesting about the shame is that parents of adults have shame. You know, a lot of times, especially Christians, who if their kids are blowing it, they have shame. They go, you know, it's my fault. I was the bad parent. And you said it so well that, you know, really good parents have kids who make poor choices. So I think the way we work through our own shame or our own pain is I think we do it in community. So I've been in a small group for 21 years with these men. And when we first got into the group, we were men. We talked about sports and a little bit about God. And, you know, we didn't really go deep. And then we got deeper and deeper. One of the men became vulnerable about a marriage and that he was struggling. I mean, he stayed married, but we all jumped in. And so when our daughter, our middle daughter, who's a clinical Christian psychologist now, which is funny, but, you know, when she kind of made some poor choices, I thought, the first thing I thought, I need to talk to these men about this. And so what happened was I had men around me who helped me. And I think with moms, sometimes they won't bring up the issues because they're afraid that it's going to make them look bad, when in fact, nobody is perfect. And so I think we need to make sure that we build a community around us where we can express our hurt and our pain and our struggles with our kids. And nobody's going to try to fix it. I mean, that's not what you need. Sometimes you just need somebody to come alongside you. And when we're weary or when we're hurting, and so we've got to be honest about that. So we've got to find that safe. Who are those safe people? It might be a small group in a church. It might be one person who's, you know, a friend that you have coffee over. Kathy is today. She had coffee with a good friend of hers that she used to teach with. And I know that she will have had a great experience because they used to do the coffee and go walk and do stuff together. And they haven't as much because of a move. That's going to be a beautiful experience. And yet, in our honesty and our vulnerability, that's where we're healed. In fact, even the Bible says, confess your sins to one another and be healed. Well, the healing sometimes comes out of the confession of, not that it's a sin per se that our kids are doing bad in terms of our own life, but the confession of saying, wow, I'm really struggling with my children, and having people around you who can accept you and understand that it's, you know, you're not a bad person, mm-hmm. and, you know, aren't going to shame us, but actually embrace us and, you know, help carry us along.
Well, you know what I see as a nurse practitioner, Jim, is that a lot of times parents just bear this in secret. They're so afraid of the shame and stigma, especially from, you know, their Christian peers. Like, what will you say? Right. What is that going to say about my parenting? What's that? Right. I don't want you to label my kid. And what I say is that not everyone needs to know everything, but someone needs to know something. And what I see then as a nurse practitioner is that, you know, that psychological trauma can only plow its way through your physical body before it starts to manifest as symptoms. And then you've got headaches and you can't sleep, and then you're struggling with your weight, or, you know, you've got blood pressure issues or diabetes. I mean, those are all manifestations. And I think that's why it's so important that you take care of yourself and recognize the impact that this trauma can have. And that's where a village can come in and help support you in those ways.
Yes, it's so key. We Christians don't do self-care well, and that's not selfish. And what I hear you saying is, no, we need to make sure that we're taking care of our own soul and taking care of our own body and taking care of our own mind so that we can be ready for when, you know, the tough things happen. You know, when the Bible, Jesus said this at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, you know, when you, and he said, you know, your rain and wind is going to come. And you're either going to build a foundation on sand and you're going to crash, or you're going to build a foundation on rock and you're going to bend and almost break, and but you're going to make it. We have to build our own foundation on the rock so that when those winds come and blow, and sometimes with our adult kids, they're blowing pretty hard, we're not breaking. We're depending on God to give us the strength. He doesn't promise us that everything's going to be, you know, always, you know, a bed of roses. What he promises us, that he'll never leave us or forsake us. And I think that's an important difference.
I completely agree. Well, this time has flown by, Jim. What last words of encouragement would you like to offer to parents?
Well, I would actually say to a parent, whether they're struggling or not, that as their kids become adults and they their kids have you know, fresh experiences, follow their lead and find some fresh experiences on your own, and you know, lean into this season of your life. Games are won in the second half, Jessica, not in the first half. Well, in the second half of our life, as our kids become adults, and some of us will be married longer without kids, you know, because of the pre and the post, if you would, you know, really, really put energy into that second half and take care of your own soul. Take care, but at the same time, make that relationship with your adult kids work, whatever that takes.
You just made friends with my husband because he believes there's no parenting problem that can't be solved with a sports analogy. And he continually tells me I'm getting them wrong. But thanks so much for joining us. Get Jim's book. We'll post it on the website and we'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.